Welcome to another edition of Radio Zine here on KBOO Community Radio. I'm your host, Ken Jones. On today's show, our guests are Joshua Samuel Brown and Stephanie Huffman, authors of the new book, Formosa Moon, from Things Asian Press. Formosa Moon is part memoir, part travel guide, in which Josh and Stephanie tell the story of their move from Portland, Oregon to Taiwan in January of 2017. Josh was familiar with Taiwan through his work there as a travel writer and tour guide and absolutely loves the place. His partner Stephanie had never been to Taiwan but knew all during their time in Portland that Josh would one day want to move back there together. A decision that would take into account Stephanie's love for him, her taste for adventure, and an aversion to gluten. Josh is the author of Vignettes of Taiwan, How Not to Avoid Jet Lag and Other Tales of Travel Madness, and 13 Lonely Planet guidebooks focusing on his journeys through Asia and Central America. Stephanie is an artist, writer, costume designer, and puppet master who's currently pursuing her master's degree at Taiwan's National Shangqi University. Together with Josh's brother Seth Brown, a.k.a. Yorick Jones, they wrote, performed, and produced the now-defunct radio comedy show Puppet Radio Theater on KBOO. According to author Eve Brown Waite, Formosa Moon is more than just another wonderful travel book about Taiwan. It's armchair travel at its finest with a delightful he says, she says twist. Like the beautiful island itself, Formosa Moon will surprise and delight you at every turn. You don't have to know Taiwan or even have any plans to ever visit the place to love this book, but after reading Formosa Moon, you might feel compelled to make the trip yourself. Joshua Samuel Brown and Stephanie Huffman are currently in Taiwan and coming to us through the miracle of Facebook Messenger. Welcome back to KBOO. We miss you guys.
We miss KBOO.
Oh, we totally do miss having Puppet Radio Theater in our lives. Like, we have so many sketch ideas to do future episodes.
We already accept the offer to, on behalf of KBOO, to come back. And all we ask in return is that Ani bring us the head of Jill Stein.
Okay, we'll get your brother to help out there, too. Now, Josh, you have a section at the start of the book called Taiwan in a Nutshell. We learned that Taiwan is the common name for the country. The official name is the Republic of China. Why did you title the book Formosa Moon?
Okay, so the original idea with the book was that we would take 30 days to travel around Taiwan. And in Chinese, in Mandarin, 1 month is 一个月, one moon, 1 month, because yue is month or moon, it's both. So the idea was that we would travel around and that this would just be sort of an endurance sport of seeing as much of Taiwan as we could in 1 month. Now, we quickly abandoned that idea for a number of reasons, not the least of which we realized that 1 month wouldn't be nearly enough to see all the things that we wanted to see. With the Formosa, I like the way that Formosa sounds. I had played with the idea of Taiwan Moon. It didn't sound good to me. And since Formosa is very much a recognized a moniker of Taiwan that even predates the whole Republic of China or Taiwan or Taiwan independence movement, I thought that would be a good and sort of neutral way to put it. So, and I like the way that it sounded.
Oh, it sounds great.
Yeah, Formosa to me sounds more romantic.
Yeah.
And Stephanie, speaking of romance, from talking with you previously, and I know this is a controversial topic, but how and where did you and Josh first meet?
This is controversial.
Well, we talked about this yesterday, and apparently you couldn't agree.
Long-winded and animated. Basically, we met at a party. Josh and I are like the old couple that likes to bicker on the details of how it happened, which is what the controversy is. But we met at a party in Portland, and he just started making me laugh immediately, and I absolutely loved it. It was the night I was going to see a Doug Stanhope show, and so I stopped in, saw him, and then later went to a comedy show, and he made me laugh just as much as Stanhope did.
Oh, and Josh, what attracted you to Stephanie besides her great sense of humor?
I knew that she would be easy to tell. No, I'm sorry. Okay, the first conversation that she and I had, when I first moved to Portland, I lived in the northwest part of the city, and I lived right across from it was a women's health clinic. Hi, ni hao. I'm in this person's alleyway because I'm looking for a quiet place, so that's why I just said ni hao to the guy who grabbed his bicycle. I'm sorry. Back to the story. So and this is a women's health clinic, and basically every morning I would wake up, and you know, 3 mornings out of 5, and there would be protesters out there. So one of the first conversations that we had was, why don't you come over and basically in the morning we can pretend that we're God and that we're basically having a conversation with the abortion protesters downstairs. And that actually turned into the first sketch that we ever did for – it was before Puppet Radio Theater. This was for the Ubu Hour, where we did what was later – The Ubu Christmas, where we were Joseph and Mary walking towards an abortion clinic, and so basically the first conversation that we had was a sketch that we eventually wound up writing for KBOO. So, and at that point it was like, oh yeah, this is definitely somebody that that is worth partnering with on a number of levels. So
now Stephanie, the first chapter in the book's called The Talk, in which both of you write that from the very start of the relationship, Josh made it clear he would one day move back to Taiwan. During the years you were together in Portland, and that was about 4 years, was that something always at the back of your mind?
No. I basically, like, filed it away into, like, the way, way back of my mind. So, like, once I started going back to school to finish my bachelor degree, I didn't think about it for, like, at least a good year. And then I think, like, in that last year, Josh was like, you know, hey, about that. And so we had to start talking about it again. But he went back to Taiwan. And so that would kind of bring it to the forefront of my mind. Because I think he went back twice when I was in school.
During, I think it was 2016 and 2015, first I came back to do, like, a month-long bicycle trip. And yeah. I kept calling you using, like, basically Facebook Messenger with video and showing you little films from Taiwan that I was making. And then in 2016, I came back again and I did some gig for the Tourism Bureau. I forget what it was.
We mentioned, Josh, that you have a lot of experience as a travel writer, mostly Lonely Planet guides. And you're also someone who caught wanderlust at a young age. You've been to many places. What's special about Taiwan for you, and why were you so determined to make it your home again?
I used to say things like, Taiwan is where people who had bad childhoods go for a do-over. I moved here when I was just 24, and it's a good place to have an extended adolescence because people are generally more forgiving here of various foibles and weirdnesses, which is a good thing if you happen to be a person in their early 20s who doesn't quite want to grow up yet. So it was easy for me to live here in my mid to early 20s. I did fall in love with the culture. I was glad that I could, you know, I felt the challenge of learning to speak another language was something that sort of kept me mentally stimulated. And I just appreciated a lot about the place and the country and the culture. And later I would sort of expand that to include, you know, when I started being more of a writer and not just teaching but also writing, I would then travel both to China and all over Southeast Asia. But it gave me a certain I was never bored here, although, you know, I experience a lot of anxiety sometimes because it's a very stimulating place, but I'm never bored. So I think it's that. It's helped me with my boredom issues.
Now, I'm kind of alternating here like the book does, the he said, she said.
So
Stephanie's turn. Now, you heard Josh's stories of Taiwan and knew about his great love for the island, obviously. And as you mentioned, he went back at least twice for the bike tours while you were together. But you also had a home and friends in Portland, not to mention the cat formerly known as Granola. So
what's his name now?
I think Max.
Oh, I know.
Is it Max?
Magoo,
that's it.
His name every week.
It's Magoo. So this
he'll
may
always be Granola to me.
I don't think we want to spend a lot of time on the cat, but so you made the move with Josh with some reservations and trepidation. A fear.
I made the reservations. I was able to make the reservations.
And she made the trepidation.
Hey-o. Yes. Like, I I agreed to it, and then, like I said, I got all just wrapped up in school and all the chaos and concentration that entails. But then when it started getting closer, and I had to actually, you know, really start thinking, what were we actually going to do? That started, you know, like, stuff got real, and having to say goodbye to certain things I loved. Like, Portland is definitely one of my favorite places I've ever lived, and so it was tough to say goodbye to Portland, tough to say goodbye to the cat, although he's happy with Josh's brother.
Happier.
He was leaving, happier. Leaving my little community, like, I had a belly dance community and a knitting community, and so that was, you know, a little tough, but I have moved around before, so I do like traveling, so it seemed like the pros would outweigh the cons, and it was exciting to live overseas, because I hadn't actually done that, a very little bit before I had met Josh.
And Josh, you and Stephanie left Portland for Taiwan a little over 2 years ago. It was New Year's Eve 2016.
It was New Year's Eve 2016, yeah.
And you quote Lao Tzu in the book. Here's the quote: "A good traveler has no fixed plans and is not intent on arriving." Now, you're certainly a good traveler, but you had plans. What were your main objectives at the start of the move? And I think mainly convincing Stephanie to stay in Taiwan?
By the time that we had really started, by the time that we got our plane tickets and, you know, started selling off our things in Portland, I had already gotten Things Asian Press to basically, you know, offer us an advance for the book, and I was already in the deep planning phases of, and it was already at that point that I realized, no, we're not going to be able to do this in 30 days. So I had, at the very least, okay, we're going to be traveling around Taiwan for at least 3 months. I had a rough outline of what places I wanted to go, but, you know, some places were places that I had already been, others were places that I wanted to see, still others were places that I thought would be of interest to Stephanie because of her interest in art and culture and puppetry, especially. There's a big puppetry culture here. So the idea was, okay, you know, we'll stay here for 3 to 6 months. And the idea was, by the end of that time, I would need a reason for us to stay here for at least another year and a half or 2 years, since we'd already given up our apartment in Portland. And so the idea was either A, one of us or both of us will find jobs. B, one of us or both of us will decide to go to grad school here, and I assume that would be Stephanie. And, you know, we kind of split the difference, and by the time that we were done with the book, I don't know if we should mention this because it's kind of the end of the book, but why not? We can edit this out. You know, by the time that the book ends, we're 6 months into the research period, it even took a lot longer than 3 months, you know, Stephanie had already been accepted into the master's program at Zhengzhou University, and I had been offered a job at the company that I currently work for called My Taiwan Tour. So all of those ducks kind of lined up in a row, in addition to, oh, and by the way, we also got the book done on deadline. So by August of 2017, the book was already on the way to the publisher. And, you know, now it's just, well, we should certainly pursue other opportunities here.
You're listening to Radio Zine on KBOO Community Radio. We're talking today with Joshua Samuel Brown and Stephanie Huffman, authors of the new book, Formosa Moon, from Things Asian Press. Yeah, that's amazing. You got it done in about a 7 month period there from
about
January.
It's 7 months for the research and writing. And that was, we got chapters and pictures in the book. I don't know if we have pictures of this, but like the entire wall of our apartment in New Garden City, which we write about a lot, was just covered with, you know, we had like post-it notes, and, you know, we're like moving chapters around and we're thinking up new chapter titles and stuff like that. So that was, it was kind of, our apartment in New Garden City became sort of like the war room for, you know, that 7 months.
We did have maps too.
We had maps. Oh, maps were all over the place with strings attached to the maps, you know.
Now, I really like the format of the book. As mentioned, it was that he said, she said, kind of a two-person Rashomon approach to the adventure. How did you come up with that?
How did we come up with that? I think we had always thought, like, oh, well, one of us will probably write a chapter each. But then as we started talking about certain things, it kind of just made sense.
Yeah, I think it was organic in that matter, in that originally, yeah, where it's like, oh, you write this chapter, I'll write that chapter. But as we progressed, it just seemed like it was a more natural thing that it would be, I would write a certain part of a chapter. Now, there are a couple of chapters that are solely Stephanie's and a couple of chapters that are solely mine, but most of them are a mixture of both voices. And that just, it seemed to be the sensible way to do things. So
that was my Rashomon reference, is often yeah. you're providing two different perspectives on the same event.
And that, I think that seemed to be the natural way, because the same events are remembered. I mean, you know, one of the first questions you asked is the day that we met. We both remember that slightly differently. So
now the person somewhat responsible is in my next question. That's Stella Harris. And Stephanie, she's the Portland-based sex educator, coach, and writer. She wrote of Formosa Moon, "While this is a book about travel and about place, having been co-authored by a couple also makes it a book about relationships. From the first pages, you get a glimpse not only of what planning a life-changing move is like, but what it means to negotiate for your needs in a relationship," end quote. And you're very honest about that relationship in the book, both of you, even when things are not so rosy. Was that a painful task at times?
No, because whenever something kind of bad happened, we would joke that it was grist for the mill.
Makes a better book.
Yeah, it does. It makes a better book. And so, we had to put it in.
There's another quote, and I need to, I thought that it was Michael Palin, but I could be wrong. But it's something like, the job of a travel writer isn't to have a great time and write about it. The job of a travel writer is to have a terrible time.
That's true.
Don't quote me. It's not an exact quote, but I've always found that reading different other travel writers' work, if all they're doing is having fun, it becomes boring, which is one of the things about blogging. A lot of bloggers these days just like, oh, I went here and I had a great time. It's like, okay, great. I prefer reading narratives in which the chunky and the smooth are sort of mixed in more of an even way. And the fact is, you don't move sight unseen to a completely different country and culture where they don't speak your language, where they don't quite understand your dietary, you know, restrictions and stuff like that, without it having some moments that are going to be difficult and challenging. And for me, when I first came to Taiwan, I didn't have a lot of those restrictions, and so there wasn't the same challenge. But even for me, coming back at the age of, you know, my late 40s, as opposed to my mid-20s, I started to experience some of the challenges, not just on Stephanie's behalf, like, oh, we have to find gluten-free food for her, but also like, wow, this long, weird, circumlocutuous trek that was fun when I was in my mid-20s is now just a pain in the ass. And, you know, living in Portland really kind of got me addicted to comfort. And a lot of our, especially, and you'll read this in the book, a lot of our first year here wasn't comfortable in the way that I had hoped that it would be.
And one big example of the honesty and the discomfort, your discomfort in the book, is your visit to a fortune teller, which is an experience I love. That was in Tainan. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes, Tainan is perfect.
And the fortune teller is Madam Chen. Can you both tell us about that experience? I just love that chapter.
Madam Chen is avoiding us.
we've gone back to try to give her a copy of the book, and she hasn't been there, what, twice now?
Well, she's a fortune teller, so obviously she can see the future. She's like, oh, God, those Westerners who I told.
They're on their way.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm going to take the day off. Literally three times we've passed by, and she's just never there. I'll pass this over to you, Stephanie.
Oh, good. It was the funniest thing that most stands out in my mind is, so we went there and we had this little entourage because we were staying at a hotel nearby, so we had people to document it and people to translate, and so we have just a little group. And then it was so surreal, because as in the book we wrote about how when we got our fortunes, like the smells were very pungent that day, and that was such a weird, like, underscoring of what she was saying, and how she, like how Josh had said, so the original idea was it would be translated into Chinese and with the title Formosa Honeymoon. So we had this kind of vague idea, maybe we'll get married, but it wasn't anything definite. And she really just said no to that. And
she did ask you first, though, if you wanted it straightforward or beat around the bush, right?
That was my favorite part. No, she said, do you want me to have a sweet tongue?
She said something. Do you want me to sugarcoat it? Do you want me to sugarcoat it? Like, no, give it to me straight.
And I appreciated that. I'm curious if she. I want to meet her again because I want to ask, like, do you get this kind of fortune often? And do people usually just want the straight fortune, or do they ask for it to be sugarcoated? Because we asked for just laid on us, and it was that we are better as a couple. Unofficially together and not so good if we become legally entwined.
And she had some other advice in there too, right? That Stephanie, you should live off
that, because the funny thing, this is a more traditional society. It's a Confucian society. So her advice that I would have a lot of boyfriends in my future and still be with Josh is very surprising for, you know, a Confucian society living fortune teller to tell me. It was very progressive. I was like, wow, you're so hip. I couldn't believe it. Like, that's very in mesh with Portland's lifestyle. So she'd be great there, you know, doing fortunes on Burnside Bridge. But I was a little surprised by that. And I want to share that my mother read the book. And when she got to that part, she wrote me a letter of concern, which I just found utterly charming.
What was it like?
She gave me the best review.
Was it stay away from other men when you hit 50, or what was the advice?
Well, yeah, because that was the fortune. I would become an older lady and become an older lady slut instead of in my 20s slutting it up. And so she wrote that it was unthinkable to do that, and that would, you know, harm my relationship. And I thought, you know, my mother is like 70 now, and I was like, you know, I'm not gonna have this discussion. We never had that kind of level of discussion, so why start now? So I just wrote her a nice email back, and was just like, I appreciate your concern, because it's coming from a place of love. And I was like, we're happy, we're fine, don't worry about us. But that was, I think that of all the reviews we've gotten, that was secretly my favorite. have a mother concerned.
Now, Josh, you kind of implied it just now, but you called Madam Chen's town of Tainan the Portland of Taiwan.
Yes.
It is.
What do we have in common, the Portlanders and the Tainanese?
Okay. So, this actually came when I was working for Portland Walking Tours. I had a group of guests who were actually from Tainan, and they were the ones who I wish that I had kept their business card, because, like, oh my god, Portland is a lot like Tainan. And I had been to Tainan before, but it had been a couple of years, so I said, what do you mean? I said, oh, we see all these coffee shops here, and it's very trendy to have coffee shops now with, you know, single origin coffee, and, you know, like 20 something dudes with art degrees running the coffee shops. And they especially mentioned, you know, we see all these fixed gear track bikes here in Portland. Those are very trendy in Portland. I'm sorry, in Tainan. And so later, when we did that chapter, if you look at the book, you'll see these pictures, I think it's on page 143, where there's these two hipster-looking dudes with caps and denim jackets, and they're both riding fixed-gear track bikes. So, I ran into more fixed-gear track bikes in, you know, Tainan than I did anywhere else but Portland in New York City, which I found was a unique thing. Maybe it's because it's a flat city. But also the other thing about Tainan is that I met a lot of people who they left Taipei because the rents had gotten too expensive, and they're like, I don't just want to, you know, work my whole life. I want to live someplace where I can do art and I can, you know, open up a little cafe or do my thing or play music on the streets, and rents are cheap enough in Tainan. And last time I checked, rents were rising there too, so the artists were looking for other places to move, which is also, for better or worse, kind of like Portland.
Now, you mentioned also there was a Madame B's. It was like artisan cupcakes, which reminded me of like the voodoo donuts of of cupcakes
down.
There. Oh no.
Yeah, that's what we said. We were like, you're in the book.
Yeah, it was too late for us to take it out of the book. So if you're buying this book just for direction to go to Mary B's for cupcakes, there are better reasons to buy the book, but Mary B's is no more. I ran into her like 2 months ago, and she's like, yeah, the place closed down. I'm like, oh, you should buy the book anyway. So
Now, I want to talk about also, some of the differences between Portland, well, mostly the U.S. and Taiwan. You mentioned that the people in Taiwan are extremely kind and helpful, especially to Westerners, but don't expect the drivers to stop for pedestrians.
Yeah, basically, yes. That's the I definitely trust people to help me. And although people in Portland are super nice, so that's one of the things I liked about Portland is people in Portland generally tend to be polite and friendly and, you know, kind of, you know, helping their fellow person. So there's not that much of a difference. But the bigger difference is between Taiwan and other places that I've traveled. In China, I mean, I travel in China, but people tend to be more friendly. Like if you're standing online and dickering because you don't understand the language, somebody in China will just push you out of the way and say, you know, I got to get here. I got to get to the counter before you. Whereas in Taiwan, someone will be like, oh, do you not speak Chinese? Can I help you? I'll help you buy your ticket. Don't worry. And they'll actually do it and not, you know, take a couple of dollars from you for it. So, you know.
I was wondering when Josh first, when we first came, if he, because he had said, people are in Taiwan are so friendly. As a foreigner, if they see you staring at a map for too long, they'll come up and introduce themselves and see if you need help. And I was like, that seems a little much. But that has literally happened to me here. Because I have been staring at the map because I've been trying to figure out the place I'm going. And I've had people come up and in English, and they introduce themselves, and they make sure I know where I'm going. Very sweet. The kindness here is just wonderful.
It doesn't happen as much as it used to, and the reason is twofold, and it's all because of cell phones. Number one, it's assumed that if you're staring at a map, you probably have a cell phone, so you can just Google map it. And two, everybody else is staring into their cell phones all the time, so they're not quite noticing things.
You mentioned one story in the book where a woman, I guess she was on a bicycle, and she had a bag of about $1,000, Taiwan dollars, which is about $300 in the U.S.
It was about $1,000. I didn't count at all, but it was a big chunk of 1,000 NT notes, each of which is worth about $30. So, yeah.
And she recovered all of them thanks to you and other bystanders, right?
We had very little. We were just there, but everybody stopped their cars and people got out and they, you know, grabbed the money and they gave it to her. And to, you know, I still have no idea why is she carrying all this money in like a little paper envelope. In the basket of, there were better ways to go about that.
but still, it may be a little different than the story if that had happened in Portland.
I would say so,
I thought that was very sweet that just people stopped what they were doing because they saw that she needed help. And
people did. A beautiful story. Now, Josh, Stephanie, we mentioned right now, is at NCCU in Taipei, and she's going for her master's degree. Have the two of you been discussing next steps after she gets the degree? Is that wanderlust still burning, or does Taiwan feel like home?
No, we're coming to live with you, Ken.
I've got room.
Yeah.
We're living in your place, your home.
Hey, we'll revive the puppet radio theater.
We will. Yeah, we'll do all that. We'll do the Ubu Hour, whatever.
It does come up, because, what's next?
We are we're going to be coming back to the States for a couple of reasons. One of the reasons is my mother's getting on in years, and I haven't seen her in a couple of years. Stephanie's parents, she hasn't seen in a little while. So we're going to come back and visit friends and family, and we're looking to spend some time in Portland as well. We're very homesick for Portland. We miss Portland a lot. It's, you know, definitely one of the happy places that there's a lot of tension in so far as I'm working a full-time job and, you know, Stephanie's doing a master's degree in 2 years, so we need a break from that. Two of the things that are coming up is, one, we do want to do a book tour with this book, at least on the West Coast, and we have a couple of things that we're considering, one of which is actually traveling with a puppet troupe that we write about in the book. The idea is that we would do book readings and maybe do a little bit of promoting of Taiwan as a tourist destination, while the Gudu Puppet Theater, they have amazingly good, they do a new show every year. We would help translate for the subtitles, and then they could put that on, and it would be, you know, if we can get the funds to do that, you know, we're asking a couple of different entities here in Taiwan, that would be one of the things that we would do, at least for the summer, and then in the autumn spend some time with our families. The last thing that we're also thinking of is, and there's a whole other kettle of fish, codfish specifically. I used to live in Newfoundland, you know, many years ago, and I spent some quality time there. We're actually thinking about doing a book about Newfoundland if, you know, we can find a publisher, obviously Things Asian Press is not the right publisher for that, you know, to basically the whole idea of I drag my unsuspecting girlfriend to yet another strange, obscure island.
This could be a long running series.
Her live there for, you know, longer than intended. So
yeah. One of the things I really miss about living in the Portland is a good, solid, like snowy chunk of the year. I miss the snow. I want to live someplace where I can knit again. So Newfoundland, yeah,
you'll have no problem with that in Newfoundland, I promise you.
Now, Stephanie, one last question. You write in the book something almost Buddhist, or probably very Buddhist. You say sometimes pain is but a prelude to growth. How has the pain of leaving Portland, starting up in Taiwan, helped you grow?
That's a good question. It made me just realize I'm stronger than I think I am, because I think sometimes when I have a new challenge, I will kind of doubt myself and I'll freeze up a little bit and I'll hesitate because I don't know if I can do this. And in Taiwan, sometimes it was like, well, you're doing it anyway. You may not know if you can do it, but you're on the bus and you're doing it despite yourself. And so it made me realize that I can do more than I think I can. And it definitely, living here has made me more bold, because, you know, I don't really speak the language that well. I speak a little bit now of Chinese, but I have to speak to people anyway. And so I just, it's gotten rid of a lot of my shyness, because I just have to jump in and say my mangled Mandarin and see if they understand me. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But I have to just go for it. So I like that it's increased my boldness living here.
Well, Josh and Stephanie, thanks very much for talking with us at KBOO, and I hope to see you stateside soon in Portland.
We are absolutely, you know, we'll see you when we come back. We look forward to spending some time both at the station, and, you know, as long as you're not obviously in some sort of camp by that point. So, you know, for leftists.
Right.
Exactly.
It could go either way at this point. So
it really could.
And if you know, just to put in a little plug for Taiwan, if you do need to flee all of a sudden and come to a place with a functioning democracy, you know, we do have a functioning democracy here still.
And if like me, you were looking forward in 2016 to living in a country with a female president, well, you could come here and do that.
Right.
Yes, so Tsai Ing-wen is president right now, and it's great having a country with a female president.
She likes cats.
I'm a fan.
We've been talking with Joshua Samuel Brown and Stephanie Huffman, authors of the new book Formosa Moon from Things Asian Press. You can learn more about them in the book at josambro, that's josambro.com for Josh, and twilly23 for Stephanie. I'm Ken Jones, and this has been Radio Zine on KBOO Community Radio. Many thanks to Josh and Stephanie for visiting us at KBOO all the way from Taiwan, and to all of you for listening.